Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hi, what's up? And welcome to an extremely sick, in both definitions of the word, episode of Serious Issues, a Whitley comic book podcast, in which one of us is so sick that he decided not to taint the room, the house of his co-host.
Thank you for that.
That sick man is Andrew Levins, the man who you can hear croaking into a microphone now. And every week, he and his co-host, Siobhan Coombs,
who is fully sick in the sort of that's right, other in, sense in of the good word. Way.
We read all the comics is what we do every single week. And we tell you which ones are good, which ones are bad, and which ones are fully sick. And this episode is brought to you by a very special person. His name is Denim Harry.
Cool name.
Denim Harry has been a Patreon supporter of Serious Issues for a long, long time. And he's an active member of the Serious Issues community. He is just one of many young rural Australians that love talking about comic books with good idiots like us.
Yay.
So thank you, Denim, for your support of the show and for allowing this episode to be possible.
Thanks, Denim.
Sorry that you sponsored the sick episode. I'll try not to throw up. this episode is also brought to you by King's Comics, the great people in Sydney, the greatest comic book store in the world, some might say.
I do say that.
You say it constantly. It's tattooed on your back.
Yeah.
310 Pitt Street, Sydney is where King's Comics exists, and they are lovely enough to give us all the comic books that we review on the show every single week, and it is also the place where you can find every comic book that we talk about the show on every week, including the rare ones, especially the rare ones.
Especially.
They have an enormous selection of great comic books that you should go check out. If you can't make it there in person, head to kingscomics.com and find all the books that we talk about there.
Yeah, there's heaps of like warehouse stuff on the website as well, which you can't get in store. Which is cool.
The fabled King's Comics warehouse that I plead with the King's Comics owners, just let me in there. Let me in there for 10 minutes. That's all I want in this world.
You'll just and never, they you'll never leave is the problem. It's really haunted.
one day, maybe we can record our 100th episode from the King's Comics warehouse.
We'll just both die of inhaling dust.
Of dust inhalation, yeah. So every week we begin the show by reviewing all of last week's new number one issues, all the first issues that came out last week, and we call this segment First Things First. Siobhan, I will allow you to pick the first number one issue that we talk about.
All right. Thank you. What a treat. I'm going to choose Dark Knight's Batman Lost, because it's got the shiniest cover.
So the big DC event now is called Dark Knight's Metal. And the main series is done by Scott Snyder and art by, what's his name?
Greg Capullo.
Greg Capullo. Oh, what's his name? It like had a very strong start, and now we're just getting all of these one-shots that are linked to these different evil versions of the Batman that have come from an evil dark universe. And this one is kind of brings us back to with like our regular Batman, who's like lost in the evil universe. And so we see this like retelling of his origin story and what makes him the Bat and his link to Barbatos, the evil Batman. And so this is a book that's been written by Scott Snyder with James Tynion IV and Joshua Williamson, with art by some of the better DC kind of stable artists at the moment, Doug Mankey, Yannick Paquette, and Jorge Jimenez.
Love those Yannick Paquette pages.
I love the... You beat me to it. this story was it's kind of all over the place. I should say it has colors by Will Quintana, Nathan Fairbairn, and Alejandro Sanchez. And I think this story is kind of like let down by all of those one shots, because I think if this came immediately after we lost Batman to the Dark Universe, mm-hmm. or whatever the fuck happened, this would have been this really cool issue. Like, even if it came out like a month after with nothing in between, it would have been like, oh good, catching up with this story. But it just kind of feels like, oh, another weird retelling of Batman's origin, like yet another one,
yeah.
for this event. And I'm just kind of bored by it.
It kind of, to me, this issue read kind of like Scott Snyder trying to do his best Grant Morrison, like trying to do this really meta story about like what the bat means. And it just kind of, I don't think he necessarily pulled it off. And I think also I didn't especially love it just because I have not kept up really consistently with Snyder's Batman stuff. And so I feel like there was a lot of stuff that he was referencing in this to do with the Court of Owls and like the birds versus the bats, which has been going on for all time, that I just didn't. It went over my head a little bit. And it was kind of boring also.
Yeah, look, it wasn't bad by any means. It was certainly better than the other one shots we've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that, like, yeah, that they've kind of shot themselves in the foot with this. Well, did I say Marvel did that last week? Well, now yes. DC have done it.
Everyone's shooting themselves in all their feet.
I just feel like this would have been way stronger had we not got all the other one shots before it.
I think you're right. I agree. Also, the big reveal of Barbatos or whatever looks heaps like the Spectre.
Yep.
Is he supposed to be the Spectre? He looks like the Spectre with bat ears.
Yeah, that's true. No, I don't think so, but maybe that would be cool if the Spectre came back. I like the Spectre.
Same.
He's someone that's been missing from DC books.
Agreed.
Bring him back.
Bring back the Spectre.
But it just feels like those initial, those, you know, the two kind of prelude metal issues that we got that we really enjoyed, that whole bringing back all the old DC things that we love so much.
Mm-hmm.
That just feels like so long ago, and I feel like we haven't caught back up with any of those things. Like, remember them in the fucking Sandman was part of this?
Yeah, totally. Like, where's Mr. Terrific?
Did Snyder just bring the Sandman back for one panel?
Yeah, that's it. This is like the Dr. Manhattan tease all over again.
Yeah, maybe he's playing another very, very long play with all these kind of references. Like, what's going on with the Plastic Man egg?
Yeah, exactly. Don't tease me like that.
This event feels very, very stretched out and long, because I feel like it doesn't really end until like February or March.
Yeah.
Which is a long time away. Anyway. Batman lost.
All fine.
Get lost. Let's move from DC to Image, because they put out a couple of number ones this week.
Mm-hmm.
I want to start with one that I enjoyed most of. This came out through Top Cow and was written by Zach Kaplan, who put out a book last year called Eclipse that we quite enjoyed the first few issues of,
mm-hmm.
With art by Andrea Mutti, who I really enjoy on Brian Wood's Rebels book over at Dark Horse. And Port of Earth. Port of Earth is the name of this comic, with the two of these two working together. And I'm a bit split on this issue, because the first half of the issue was incredible, in that it kind of explains that aliens appear on Earth and all they want to do is set up a portal for them to, like, basically refuel.
Mm-hmm.
They want to make like a place that alien spacecrafts can refuel. So basically they just use Earth as like a pit stop in the mm-hmm. universe. And so they make a port in the middle of the ocean. And at one point, there is an attack. Aliens kill a bunch of humans, and the humans in retaliation kill the aliens. And, because of this, they have to make like a force, a police force, I guess, to basically keep the aliens in line. And
special
all the way up until that
cops.
Point, I was like, hell yeah. I was like, this is like a really, really fun concept. Super cool. And then suddenly it just became this very... I guess I tried to kind of build the characters a bit, but it became like this weird buddy cop situation. A complete tonal change for the second half of the issue.
And neither of the characters were especially interesting thus far. They're sort of like...
Yeah, I was hoping...
Two normal white guys. One's a bit sassier and has a beard.
I was hoping they were going to build them up just to kill them.
Yeah.
Because I like when comic books do that, but that didn't happen. But I enjoyed the first half of this and the world that they created with for this book enough to give this another shot.
And Moody does such an amazing job of, like, there's such a variety of aliens. And they sort of give you a little guide in the back of, like, the main species. And that's good fun. That's really fun. I'm on board.
Yeah.
I'll give it another couple issues.
Yeah, me too. It was a very fun sci-fi book. Mm. I think it just tried to be a bit too fun towards the end. And I lost a lot of the really, like, cool situations that it set up in the first half.
And also the colouring was quite odd. It's a very, like, grayscale book. It's very sort of dimly lit or something.
Well, yeah, totally. Colors by Vladimir Popov.
An interesting choice.
Yeah, we'll check back in on this when the next issue comes out. It is promising, for sure. I can't say the same for the next issue that we're going to talk about. This is a new Image book called Coyotes,
mm-hmm.
written by Sean Lewis and Caitlin Yarsky on art. Siobhan, tell us what this book's about.
So this book appears to be about a community in some kind of South American deserty area who are fighting what seem like possessed demon coyotes. And a girl's whole family is killed by these coyotes, and so she goes and lives with this woman called the Duchess, who is training her to be like a super coyote assassin. I really liked this issue. You didn't?
I just found it really just seemed like it was written by a dude doing like young hip female dialogue that I just didn't gel with me at all.
I didn't heaps get that, but I think I was so totally sold and won over by the art that I was okay with it. I think this is like
I love the
a
art.
Beautiful
yeah,
looking book that I sort of went along with it a bit. And like there's a, like the Duchess's dialogue is very sort of funny and her word balloons are kind of all designed cool. It's impossible for me to explain what they look like. Just pick up a copy and have a peek. But
there is a backup story in this called Coffee, which kind of explains the backstory of one of the main characters in this book, and I actually enjoyed that more than the main issue.
Yes, that was a grim read, and this is very violent and it's quite sort of grim and dark, but I like it. I like this. I'm on board.
This is Sean Lewis wrote The Few, which is a book that I didn't like, but you did.
Yeah.
So this is an ongoing theme for Sean Lewis.
I'm your friend, Sean Lewis.
It's good to have a friend like Siobhan. So let's talk about... I'm going to complain about a few books this week, but I know you're going to complain about this one with me too.
Yay.
This one came out through Heavy Metal Comics, and it was called Black Hole Repo, 1985 Part 1. Did you read this?
I did.
Written by Seth M. Sherwood with Michael Marici, and pencils and inks by John Bivens with colors by John Bivens and Seth M. Sherwood. This is like a future punk space book in which there is a president called Ronald Rump.
It's one of the most subtly compelling satirical takes on Donald Trump that I have seen in comics. It's not bad at all.
I've deleted a lot of this from my brain. I liked the art and how, like, you know, I think the art captured the punk aesthetic that the book was going for a lot more successfully than the writing did.
I agree. The
colors
are very
good. It involved like it was like a space mission to, I can't remember why they were going into space.
They're like anarchists who repossess abandoned spaceships for money, and they like steal spaceships for money, and it's the new year, it's 1985, guys. Like, if you're gonna do some weird alternate sci-fi thing and it's set in 1985, why is Donald Trump president? Choose which era you're satirizing, please.
Yeah, it's not like there wasn't a British comparison of Donald Trump in the 80s.
Absolutely. Where was Margaret Thatcher?
Yeah, Margaret Thatcher. Wait, last week we established that you're not a Jetsons fan, right? Because that's how Astro speaks.
But it's also how Scooby-Doo speaks.
Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah, look, I enjoyed how many nude willies were in this book, but that was about it. I don't think I'm going to keep going.
Wait, is nude willy, is that a political reference too?
To what? What would that be referencing?
Over to Vault Comics now for a book called Deuce of Hearts.
What was this about?
This one comes to us.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Continue.
Written by Ricardo Moe with art by Tony Gregory. Siobhan seems to have a great grasp of what this book was about, so please let us know.
Like, there's a guy and he breaks people's hearts so that he gets something from an app. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
What? But then he broke the wrong heart. It was the wife of a mob guy and now he's gonna kill him. I don't know what any of this is.
And his barman is a monster of some kind.
Yeah, there's monsters. What?
Yeah, and then he gets reunited with his daughter at the end.
Yeah. That's my review.
Vault Comics are like, you know, it's cool that they're giving a lot of new properties and new cool ideas a chance, but I don't know, maybe sit on things a bit longer before putting it to print.
Yeah, this was a bit of a miss in that I have no fucking idea what happened in it at all.
Yeah, it just ended and I was like, well, I'm glad that ended.
Oh, that's not what you want.
It was a tough week for number ones this week.
Yeah.
It got to the point where I just saw like the small pile of what I had left. I made it through half of Kong on the Planet of the Apes.
Sorry?
Through Boom. And then did you read Kong on the Planet of the Apes?
I did.
I made it through half of it. I really liked the art. This came out through Boom Comics this week. It's a miniseries written by Ryan Ferrier, illustrated by Carlos Magno, and colors by Alex Guimarães. I feel like we even suggest that someone do a King Kong on the Planet of the Apes book a few weeks ago.
Yeah, and now it's here.
Did we accidentally will this into existence?
We must have done. It's the only possible answer. I quite enjoyed this.
And then I read a third of it.
That's fine. You know, I don't really know anything about the Planet of the Apes, so I think that really hampered my enjoyment of the series as a whole. But the art's really good.
Yeah, again, I think that's a common theme for whenever I don't like a Planet of the Apes book. I just don't have much love for the franchise because I've not given it much time of day in the past before. So that's on me. It's not necessarily a bad book by any means. It just failed to captivate my mind.
Mm. Yes, if you like both of these franchises, this is a good book for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that captivating the mind of someone who's watched half a Planet of the Apes movie in his lifetime is what the creators set out to do with this book. So well done to the creative team.
Agreed.
Did you read any more number ones?
I read an issue zero. Could we talk about that now?
The Harbinger Renegades.
Yeah.
From Valiant. Who wrote and drew and did all the things on this?
Story by Rafa Roberts. Art by Juan Jose Rip. Colors by Andrew Dollhouse. I think this isn't another one of those.
They just summarize everything that's happened before, right?
Pretty much, yeah. And like, there are some creepy monk guys and some weird bad guys. It was fine.
Yeah, I've stopped reading these zero issues from Valiant. I prefer just waiting for the number ones and seeing a brand new series start and seeing if I, can jump on board with that.
I think that's a good call.
It would be like not reading the comics and just listening to us talk about it every week.
Who would do that?
So, Siobhan, that is the end of First Things First for this week. A small amount of first issues, but that's a good thing, I think.
I agree. That was nice.
Because it means we can talk about the books that we actually enjoy reading for the rest of the episode. And in order to figure out what we're going to talk about first, we play a great game called Roll the Dice for Marvel or DC, in which I roll a dice to figure out whether we should review Marvel, Image, or DC next. If I roll 1 to 2, we talk about Marvel first. If I roll 3 to 4, talk about Image. If I roll 5 to 6, talk about DC. The first one up is 6, DC first. And then it is a 2. So DC, Marvel, and finally Image is the order in which we're going to review all of this week's books.
Great.
So let's start with DC and the book that everyone was talking about in our Facebook group, which you can find and join. Facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast is where you can find us. The book is the Mr. Miracle issue 4, written by Tom King with art by Mitch Gerrards. This is a classic Tom King move in that he is, you know, bringing an extremely kind of grim, real life sensibility to an enormous cosmic space story.
Mm-hmm.
And this issue in particular really, really doubled down on, I guess, the kind of depression suffered by Mr. Miracle, amongst other things that I'm sure will be explored further in future issues. But it's able to handle all these extremely heavy themes by having, like, while having these, like, cosmic gods sitting on a couch eating crudités with dip.
That was pretty great. This is definitely the issue that I've enjoyed the most of Mr. Miracle so far. And I think I was trying to figure out why I wasn't enjoying this as much as I felt like I should have. Because it's so, like, widely acclaimed. And I think it's partially because I felt up until this issue that there wasn't, like, much happening. Like, there wasn't much of a plot. It was all a bit just kind of like, this happened and then this happened. Isn't it crazy? And you can't see what's happening in this panel. 9 panels, everyone. But this issue kind of brought all those things together and gave me a bit more of an understanding of what's actually happening. And I really like his portrayal of Orion. I think that's really, yes, like, clever and cool. And I think that what they're actually now doing with Mr. Miracle is really good fun. And this issue had a lot of big barter in it. And that's a good way to get me on board with anything.
Yeah, I think his take on big barter is my favorite thing to come out of the series so far. And I loved his take on their take on Orion, because it's so often we just see creators just go, Orion's a dick.
Yeah.
He's a big old dickhead and he hates everybody and he's a dick.
Yeah.
But he was like, he's still a bit of a dick in this, but, you know, he had a stature about him that wasn't like cockish. It was just assuredness.
Yeah.
Through his position and what he's been, you know, the life that he's lived.
But also a kind of like stubborn pig-headedness or something.
Yes, 100%. But it was balanced, you know? And I feel like this issue felt the most balanced between the big, wild, cosmic adventure stuff,
mm-hmm,
and the repercussions from partaking in those things versus the inner workings of Scott Free's mind.
Yeah. I have one complaint, though. At one point,
yes,
Orion gets punched in the face and he goes, Jesus. I don't think Orion would say Jesus as a cuss. I think he would, you know, say Dark Side or High Father, totally, or something,
or,
you know?
Or Orion.
Yeah.
Just say his own name.
I'm my own god, everyone.
At one point in the new Thor Ragnarok movie, which I enjoyed, Thor says, oh, you saw it? Well done.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, that was impressive.
Did you see it from the crying room?
I sure
with
did.
Baby in arms?
That was good.
What? I still haven't done that.
It's real good.
Until he's not really a baby anymore. So I've missed my chance. Unless I borrow Shatterstar for one afternoon.
I'm fine with that.
Okay. but when Thor yells, I don't give a shit who you are.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just thought that was the most out of, like, they were like, really? Like, I know that, like, it's cool to make superheroes swear.
Mm.
But, like, Thor, the character, like, I don't care how many words he's learnt in his small amount of time on Midgard.
Yeah.
Like, as if he wouldn't say, I don't give a damn.
Yeah, yeah.
Who you are. Like, yeah.
Absolutely.
Anyway. I think Mr. Miracle is really hitting its stride now.
And agreed.
I, with everything that's introduced in this issue, I think the next one is going to be very compelling indeed.
I agree.
But this Mr. Miracle book kind of exists outside of regular DC continuity. So we'll head into regular continuity now for a few books. God, that was a terrible introduction. my painkillers just kicked out. Wore out. Let's go about Detective Comics number 968, the finale of A Lonely Place of Living, which has been written by James Tynion IV, with art by one of the better artists to kind of show up on this run. His name is on the last page here. His name is Alvaro Martinez,
mm-hmm,
with inks by Raul Fernandez and colors by Tamu Morey.
And great covers by Eddie Barrows. I really like these covers.
Yes,
they
definitely
feel really classic. And, like,
yeah,
he is
definitely
explicitly aping a George Perez cover here. Anyway.
Yeah, definitely. Because this is like the partner event to the A Lonely Place of Dying,
mm-hmm,
art from the 80s. which is when Tim Drake was introduced. And this has lots of kind of tie-ins to that event from a story beat as well. This whole thing is about Tim Drake escaping Mr. Oz's clutches and being meeting up with a future version of himself that tells him the only way to escape his own future is if he kills Batwoman. And so this saw an amazing team of all of the regular cast of Detective Comics teaming up with all of the Robins and Batman himself. I've really, really enjoyed this issue.
It's so good.
It's just baffling to me that, like, the Action Comics arc that we're about to talk about in a minute, which had its kind of wrap up this week, that got, like, the full, what do you call it, kind of holographic cover? Lenticular cover celebration, whereas this was a much more superior story in every sense of the word, that incorporated so many more characters. And there was a real sense of grandness about it. I don't understand why this didn't get the same treatment that Action did.
Mm-hmm. I agree. It's a weird one, huh?
Yeah, really weird. And I think, like, this is, like, Detective... I mean, Batman and Detective have always kind of been in the top five of my... Or top three, even, Batman DC books since the Rebirth happened. And they're probably one and two for me at the moment.
Agreed, I think.
They're both so good for completely different reasons. And I'm dropping so many other DC books at the moment, but I think these two, I've always got time for. Whenever they start a new arc, I'm like, I'm not sure about this. By the end of it, I'm always like, oh no, they're onto something great here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this has been really fun arc. I hope that it's you know, it seems so much like they're bringing some of our favorite 52. Characters back, yep. Like this future version of Tim, who knows Connor Kent, which is cool as hell. I hope they bring back my favorite Superboy.
It was confirmed today on the internet that they are.
Cool. Oh yeah, Francis Manapul or something? I don't know.
Yeah.
Cool as hell. I'm into it.
Yeah, so we can just talk about Action Comics now. Issue 991 was the finale of The Oz Effect, Part 5, written by Dan Jurgens, who not only did the story of this, but also the breakdown art, with pencils by Victor Bogdanovich.
Who's very Greg Capullo, huh?
Yeah, in this scenario, yeah. He certainly wasn't when he was on New Superman, but he's becoming more and more so. Inks by Trevor Scott and Scott Hanna, and colors by Mike Spicer. This issue kind of, you know, answered the question, is Mr. Oz Jor-El once and for all? And he is, and they wrapped up the story just like it just kind of just happened, and it was just really, really unsatisfying in every way for me.
It had no repercussions on anything. Superman kind of like killed his own dad a little bit by like snapping that staff that was stopping the kryptonite in his eye from like just who could even be bothered going into the details?
Yeah, I also it's so funny that Jor-El has a kryptonite eye now.
Yeah.
Well, not yeah. Who knows? But I just this was just like so boring, and just setting up this eventual Dr. Hatton reveal, Dr. Manhattan reveal.
Dr. Hat. Just
Dr. Hat. He's finally come to town, and nobody's head is safe. Mm. I think I might drop Action Comics now because I was so just bored by this.
Yeah, I might I'll see what the next arc is. But,
We're not far from issue 1000, and it would kind of be fun to be reading that. I'll see how I go. This is like the ultimate kind of just comics just doing bullshit that I kind of promised myself I would stop reading.
Yeah.
Just like setting up the next thing and not really giving you a satisfying conclusion to anything ever.
Yeah, not bothering with the story that's happening now because they're thinking of two stories ahead.
Yeah, totally. This felt like a zero issue, but really it's the fifth issue of a five issue. definitely if it ever comes down to it, choose Detective over Action.
Agreed.
Another comic that I was really disappointed with is Wonder Woman, issue number 34.
So good.
Written by James Robinson, with pencils by Sergio Davila, with inks by Scott Hanna, who was very busy this week. Mick Gray and Ebia Ferreira, with colors by Romulo Fiato Jr. This continues the plot that that Wonder Woman has a brother.
Yeah, the twin brother.
Jason, named after Jason of the Argonauts. And this just was just this dull kind of like catching them up story in which we finally learn out that Jason's evil, everybody.
Like,
he's a bad guy.
Why? Imagine how much more impact that would have had if they'd allowed him to be good for, like, one arc instead of half an issue. Like, the big betrayals in comic history have been big deals because they were, no one saw them coming.
If he's evil and wants to kill Wonder Woman,
mm.
or, like, use Wonder Woman for whatever bullshit the new gods want her to be used for, why did he wait for Wonder Woman to track him down instead of just going after her to begin with?
Yeah, there's a lot of issues with your plan here, Jason.
He's had half a lifetime to track down his sister. What's the deal?
He was waiting on Darkseid's boring daughter.
So I'm dropping this now until a new creative team takes over at whatever point that is.
I think that's a good call. I would love it if Darkseid's daughter was not a sexy babe also.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if she was more of a grinding goodness type, I think that would be more interesting.
Did you read any regular continuity DC books besides these ones?
I did. I read New Superman.
Yep, I've got that on my list to read after we record. How was it?
It's good. This is like Justice League versus the Justice League of China, which was pretty fun. And then,
written by Jean Luen Yang, yep. with pencils by Joe Lilich, with inks by Richard Friend, colours by Hi-Fi.
And this continues on the story arc where New Superman, Kong Keenan's sort of guy who's training him, has been kidnapped and maybe killed by, like, the yin-yang version of himself.
Yep.
So the version that's all power, and he convinces Kong Keenan to steal something from Lex Luthor that may do something bad in the future. Anyway, it was a really good issue. I did a terrible job of explaining it, but this is, like, the best Superman comic on the shelves at the moment.
Yeah, which is insane because we loved Superman and Action Comics for so long, and now, like, I don't like reading either of them.
Yeah, same. It's a disappointment. But check out New Superman. I like the sort of ongoing arc of a really headstrong young boy learning to deal with these really extreme powers. And I think they've done a really great job of incorporating kind of Chinese mythology into the Superman mythos in a way that's really good fun and unexpected.
Definitely. Is that it for all the regular continuity DC books?
I also read Batgirl and the Birds of Prey, which I think I'm just going to give up on now, guys. There's a story arc.
I almost read this issue.
It's so compelling because of the cool Yannick Paquette cover, which has, like, every major female DC character on it. But it's like all the men in Gotham are dying because of some misandrist group called the Daughters of Gotham, who are just going to kill all the men and make everything better or something. And so it's got this weird, like, misandry is going to set feminism back by decades sort of tone to it, which is just, like, super unnecessary. And it doesn't make sense how it fits in with the rest of DC continuity, but they're committed to it fitting in, like, despite the fact that in no other book is everyone like, oh, I have a cold. but anyway, that's all fine. I also read Ragman. Does that count as main DC continuity?
I looked at that and I was like, I don't want to read another issue of this.
I'm not going to. I read this issue. I don't really understand what's going on still. Sorry, Ray Fawkes.
Yeah, he's a great writer, but I think the concept of it... someone, Rebecca from our group, described it as a boring version of Moon Knight.
Yeah, that's very apt. Good job, Rebecca.
Yeah. I've got a Wildstorm book to talk about, but before we finish talking about DC, should we talk about the big news?
I don't know. What's the big news?
That Brian Michael Bendis officially announced that he has signed an exclusivity deal. I don't know when it kicks in with DC Comics after spending like 20 years at Marvel.
That is a kind huge of shaping, surprise.
Massive surprise. And, I don't know, like this might fall in the category of rants. But, like, I'm just, like, looking at my list of books that I enjoyed this week and kind of you look at the past episodes. Like, I feel like Rebirth was really, really strong for DC. And, you know, we picked up almost every DC book and gave them at least, you know, 2-3 issues mm-hmm. for the most part. Some of them we stuck with for 24 issues, but I feel like both of us have been dropping off a lot lately. Like, we pretty much every week we drop off one DC book. And, like, I don't think that Bendis... If they pick the right thing for him to move to, I think they could do some great stuff. Like, I would love to see a Brian Bendis, like, Suicide Squad book, or if he was to bring back, Gotham Central, I think maybe he could do a good job on that.
Yeah.
But then there are so many characters that I never want to read a Bendis Batman book.
Yeah. I heard someone, I can't remember who, floated the idea of him doing a Renee Montoya question book. I don't think I want that. I don't think I need Renee Montoya just being Jessica Jones.
Yeah, just like, yeah, Renee Montoya, all of her dialogue comes from her sitting on a toilet while drinking. Bendis has done it again.
It's not exactly like a fresh new voice for DC Comics. It's interesting because I've never seen a Bendis take on a DC character, but...
It's a massive get for them in one way, but I don't see what creatively he'll bring.
Yeah. It's like when Geoff Johns did an Avengers book and it was like pretty shocking.
Was that the one with the weird Ant-Man and Wasp sex scene?
It sure is. The most horrifying sex scene in all of comics. Look it up if you don't know what I'm talking about.
Maybe Bendis is just going to one-up that with like the most gross DC sex scene ever. And then be like, gotcha, and then tap out.
Something to do with the elongated man.
Oh, boy.
Goodness.
Yeah, but like, I just look at like my pile of Marvel books and like, yeah, there's definitely some books that I'm going to drop from Marvel this week. And there is something to be said that Marvel just puts out way more books than DC.
Yeah.
But they always have more of my favorite books week to week. And I know that like a lot of people look to this era of Marvel as like their worst and least successful yet. And I don't know, I don't really look at sales numbers and all that kind of stuff, but you know, critically from my point of view, like I think Marvel are putting out way more better books than DC are at the moment. What do you think?
I mean, probably in terms of sheer numbers, there's probably more, but I think percentage-wise, for me personally, DC still are just above Marvel, but it's pretty even.
With what? What do we love from Marvel? Batman, Detective.
From DC, Batman, Detective.
From DC. Yeah.
The Young Animals books are good.
But where are they right now? They're on hiatus for who knows how long.
Yes, true. And there's
the Wildstorm stuff's really good.
yeah,
I don't know. I'm going to keep asking this question to us over the next few weeks. I mean, it's never about which one is better, but I just think when the narrative is always like, oh, you know, Marvel is doing so much worse than DC now, I feel like I just don't see that at all.
Yeah. I suppose you're right. I suppose. I think everyone's terrible.
That's a better argument. Do you want to have a moment off?
No, I think we're all good.
Okay, cool. So before we finish talking about DC, let's talk about Wildstorm. This week we had a second issue of Michael Cray, which was written by Brian Hill with Warren Ellis, with art by N. Stephen Harris, Dexter Vines, and Diabla Kelly. And it now looks like this is going to be an ongoing series in which Michael Cray from the Wildstorm universe goes up against a different like universe version of like famous DC characters issue by issue and kills them.
I really like that as a concept.
I am all for it.
I am so on board with this.
And it's really funny because like, you know, you could take it from a meta point of view where it's like Wildstorm and DC didn't, like, when they merged, it was so bad that, to prove that they're so different now, they're just going to kill the regular DC universe.
But I like this, like, horrifying, slightly twisted version of these characters. Like, this version of Green Arrow, who only hunts the deadliest prey, man, is hilarious and great. And I was really on board with
funny.
That.
And it looks like the next character that he's going to go up against is The Flash.
Yep.
Which is super exciting.
That's really funny also.
And I got to give a shout out to N. Stephen Harris and Dexter Vines. That like the art in this is, and the colors by Diabla Kelly, like so good. Especially the fight between Michael and Oliver. Those action scenes are fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that Michael's unsure of how his powers are caused and what brings them on. It's a really fun dynamic.
Yeah, I'm super on board with this series. I wonder if they're going to do more Wildstorm books.
Yeah, I don't know. Hopefully, like, they keep it manageable.
Yes, keep it manageable. That's all we ask, guys.
So those are our DC books. Let's move on to Marvel now. And I want to talk about one of the most joyful issues that came out this week, and that is the Unbeatable Squirrel Girl, issue 26, the special zine issue, written by Ryan North, and then a rotating lineup of kind of guest artists. Basically, this entire issue was in order to raise money to save a library. Squirrel Girl has gotten all of her friends from the Marvel Universe to write little mini comics for her zine,
mm-hmm.
and she's going to use it as a fundraiser to save the library. So you have Howard the Duck submits a comic, which is written by Erica Henderson with art by Chip Zdarsky.
Mm-hmm.
You have like a Brain Drain comic, a Loki comic, which was brilliant. It's like this kind of awesome, like snake eating its own tail mm-hmm. kind of comic. You have a Kraven comic, a Spider-Man comic, Wolverine wrote a comic. There is a Tippy Toe, the Squirrel comic, a Galactus comic, which is hilariously drawn by Jim Davis.
Yes.
The creator of Garfield. And finally, a little kind of piece of art created by Nancy Whitehead. This was so much fun.
Such a delight. Such a fun little thing to read. I really enjoyed it.
Did you have a favorite little piece of art from within this zine?
I mean, the Kraven the Hunter comic was very funny.
Yeah, definitely.
As in Kraven's kind of relationship with Spider-Man, but told by Kraven the Hunter. So everyone's super on board with Kraven.
And then Spider-Man does like a kind of like a diss back comic of his own, which is just crap.
Yeah.
It was really, really funny.
I liked the bit where they're like, Spider-Man, these are not spider sense lines. They're just stink lines. Nobody ever talks about how stinky he is.
Yeah. What I love about this is, like, you know, how creative Erica Henderson and Ryan North are with this book. You know, we got that incredible Choose Your Own Adventure issue last mm-hmm. year. And now we're getting, like, you know, this zine issue. And, like, they should be gimmicky, but they're really not. They're totally in tone with what the book is like normally.
Yeah.
Because they've created such a great narrative for and kind of personality for Squirrel Girl to have, and which she kind of doesn't.
Well, and for the associated Marvel Universe through her, like the way Tony Stark is in her comics and the way Kraven the Hunter is in her series is so different to the rest of the Marvel Universe, and it's so consistently joyful and funny.
Yeah. This is a great issue. If you haven't read an issue of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl and you want to understand why we keep going on about how much fun it is, this is a great one to just pick up and read.
Agreed. Oh, and the next issue looks like it has Beta Ray Bill in it. I just noticed
which is
cover. Cool.
Who's somebody that I always complain about not being in enough comics these days. And there he is.
That's a cool issue.
How exciting.
I'm excited.
So we got a few first issues of the new Legacy renumberings mm-hmm. This week. And one of those was Moon Knight, issue 188, with new creative team, Max Bemis, and Jason Burrows, with colors by Matt Lopez.
Who is Max Bemis? Max Bemis,
he is he's a singer in a band called Say Anything.
Okay.
And he wrote the worst X-Men ever. X-Men ever. Did you read that miniseries?
Yeah, I liked that.
Me too.
Enjoyed
and He also wrote this book that just has one more issue left. It's Through Dynamite, their Atari imprint Centipede.
Yep.
Which I'll be reviewing later in the episode. But he's a promising comic book writer for sure. Mm. And I thought this was such a strong issue.
Holy moly. What a killer first issue in a run. Incredible art, incredible concept. Like, yeah. Loved it. Loved everything about this.
And such a ballsy move to write a first issue of Moon Knight that doesn't have Moon Knight in it.
Absolutely. And to have
from everyone's point of view, like,
yeah,
ballsy.
Absolutely. Yeah, I can't really fault this issue. The coloring is incredible. It looks beautiful. The concept is so fun. I'm so excited to see this new villain, Amun-Ra, and see how he interacts with Moon Knight. It's such a departure from the Jeff Lemire run, but still really fits in with Moon Knight as a concept. And like,
yeah, definitely.
This is such a, like, this issue is great on its own. This is, I'm excited to see where it leads, but if this was a one shot, this would be just as compelling, which is like the ultimate test for me.
Yeah, definitely. So what it is basically, it's almost like a setup, an entire issue of setup for, I guess, the next villain that Moon Knight will go up against in this arc. And he is somebody who is ex-army, and after being bullied by all of his fellow soldiers for too many times, he ends up burning them all.
Setting them on fire.
And so he's in the Ravencroft Asylum, talking with his doctor, and the doctor has been obsessed with Moon Knight in the past. Mark Spector always talks about how, like, you know, there's similarities between her new patient and Mark Spector that she sees, and decides to use the ancient Egyptian relics and gods that Mark Spector kind of sees and uses with his own mental afflictions. She decides to use them as part of the healing process for her patient, and maybe that wasn't the best idea.
No, a bad call, it turns out.
It was such an incredible issue. Like you said, like a brilliant one shot. I think easily the best of these new Legacy number ones.
Mm.
And a really exciting, like, holy shit, where did these guys come from?
Totally.
First issue. From both Max Bemis and Jason Burrows, whose name is familiar, but like, I can't tell you anything he's ever worked on in the past from memory.
Yeah, same.
And his art was outstanding.
Yeah, like really, really beautiful and like gory and horrifying. Like the panel, when you realize that this guy, you know, because it seemed so hopeful that he was going to get better, and then once you realize that he is not better, he is worse, if anything, those panels are like horrific. Like,
yeah,
killer issue. So good.
Yeah. And not only did he create like a new villain with so much depth, but the doctor,
yeah,
who I hope we'd see again somehow, like, is one of the most well-rounded characters that I've been introduced to through comics in a long time.
Absolutely. Just through, like, you know, small, subtle moments, like her not being present at a dinner party with friends, or the fact that she keeps a sort of shrine to Moon Knight in her bedroom, and how clever she is, and, yeah, I flippin' love this. It's incredible.
Yep. This is great. This is, like, got to be one of my favorite issues of the week.
Yeah.
And certainly something that I would recommend to everyone listening right now. Even if you have not had time to indulge in a Moon Knight comic in the past, definitely pick up Moon Knight number 188. The arc is called Crazy Runs in the Family, and I'm very excited to read the next issue.
Same. If you like horror comics, definitely check this out.
Yeah, brilliant cover too.
Yep, agreed.
Looking forward to hearing what our friends over at the Into the Night podcast say about this issue.
Mm.
It must be very exciting to run a extremely specific podcast about a smaller character at a time when, like, you know, one of the best superhero comics of the week is about that character.
Yeah.
How cool. Go check out that podcast, by the way. Started by two people that met through our podcast. It's called Into the Night. And obviously Night is spelt K-N-I-G-H-T. Go check it out. Another Legacy renumbered book was issue number 595 of Daredevil this week, which I assume you didn't read?
I did read it. Whoa.
Oh, great. That's amazing. Well done.
Thank you.
Mayor Fisk is the name of this arc. It's written by Charles Soule, with art by Stefano Landini, colors by Matt Miller. Basically, yeah, as the arc title suggests, Wilson Fisk, a.k.a. the Kingpin, is the mayor now. And we've said so many times in the past how, like, you know, we loved Charles Soule's take on She-Hulk because of how much, like, real-world legal stuff he was able to put in amongst the run because of Jen Walters' profession as a solicitor. Solicitor? Is she a solicitor?
I don't know.
She's a lawyer. Just a lawyer. Okay, lawyer. Whatever. But, you know, Matt Murdock is also a lawyer, and we would tap in, tap out of this... of this run since he started however many issues ago, and it wasn't as lawyer heavy as I was hoping for until more recent issues. There was a big thing all about Matt Murdock in the Supreme Court a couple of issues ago, but this issue was so great in that, like, it kind of explains how Wilson Fisk like he's just the mayor now, and everyone in the all these characters have to deal with it. I feel like a lesser comic would have built up this like.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive and June. Olive and June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You know, Wilson Fisk is running for mayor, but instead it's just like, it's like this shock that comes to Daredevil, and he can't do anything about it as Daredevil, and he tries to do something about it as Matt Murdock, and he can't do that either. And so Charles Soule is able to explain all that through, like, you know, legal terms. And I really enjoyed this issue. I'll be sticking with this for sure.
See, I really didn't enjoy this.
Oh.
I think that the, like, again, I think that the sort of trying to comment on American politics I found boring. I find them trying to fit in aesthetically too close to the Netflix series also very boring. I find this version of the Kingpin okay, but he looks too much like the Netflix version, and that's just a personal annoyance for me. And Matt Murdock is one of the least appealing, like, most boring characters in comics, so I just can't I cannot be arsed with this.
Yeah, okay. Alright, well, I really enjoyed it, and I liked that it also gave a shout out to the Kingpin series that Matt Rosenberg wrote with the book.
Oh yeah.
Because his book played a large role in his rise to power to become the mayor.
That was better.
Read that. I thought of all of the kind of parallels to draw to current American politics.
Mm.
I didn't think this was as on the nose as any of the other things that we've seen.
No, it's not as on. It's no Ronald Rump. But I still was just like, no, shut up.
It's no Margaret Ratcher.
Marvel, yes, no Margaret Ratcher.
Wilson Risk. have you got any other legacy little restarts coming on?
So
a little check through here. Did you read Master of Kung Fu, issue 126?
I sure did.
Shang-Chi's Day Off, written by the wrestler himself, CM Punk, with art by Dalibor Talajic and colours by Eric Arseniega.
I am yet to be convinced that CM Punk can write comics.
I thought this was pretty funny. Like, it read like a goofy kind of 80s action movie. I think if you come into this with like a Big Trouble in Little China kind of sensibility, you could enjoy it. But it was very silly.
And it was like so much dialogue all the time. And I personally didn't feel like the jokes landed. The art was fine.
Yeah. It was nothing above okay, but I didn't dislike this at all. So basically Shang-Chi has a pet monkey that he rescued, and he and the monkey accidentally infiltrate a doctor's lab in which he's doing experiments on different animals that he's stealing from the zoo in the neighborhood with ninjas, and Shang-Chi rescues a ninja octopus. It sounds great when I describe it, but
see, I hate it. I just hated that whole thing. I hated that the doctor was called Malpraxis, as if we're supposed to, like, that doesn't sound that much like malpractice. Give him a name that sounds more like malpractice. Call him Malpractice.
Like Malcolm Practice.
Yes. There you go. I just don't think CM Punk is a very good comic book writer. I'll fight him.
He'll kill you.
He absolutely would kill me. But he came into King's once, and he was a very scary man. He was very nice to the people who recognized him. He was less
like
nice
for a signing or just to buy comics?
Just to buy comics. He was just in town.
That's awesome.
Came in to buy
comics. How could you not like him?
I just didn't know who he was. I don't know wrestling.
No, I said, how could you not like him now?
Oh.
I would just...
Oh, I large dislike wrestler heaps came to my of shop. King's customers. I'm joking. I love them all.
Okay. What's his King's member number?
666.
Did you sign him up?
No.
So let's talk about some X-books. X-Men Gold, issue number 15 by Mark Guggenheim and Diego Bernard and J.P. Mayer and Ray Barreto. Why is this stupid Mojoverse crossover thing still going? I'm so bored of it. It's so tiresome.
And it's so funny because, like, the gold issues are so trash and the blue issues are, like, okay. Like, I don't mind every second issue of this arc. But, yeah, this issue was exceptionally bad.
There's one more issue of the Mojo World thing, which is X-Men Blue. I feel like skipping it because I just don't care how you resolve a Mojo story.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Mojo should just be... He works as, like, a cameo. Like, you know, like, suddenly you're in Mojoverse, you're in a television show for, like, 10 panels, and then that's it.
Yeah.
But, like, 6 issues?
Too much boring. Mojo.
It's stupid. No good. Where else? There are some X-Men in the Uncanny Avengers team, and I read Uncanny Avengers number 29.
So did I.
Written by Jim Zub, with art by Sean Isaacs and Wayne Ramirez. Colors by Tamara Bonvillain, and you can absolutely tell because it's the pinkest issue of Uncanny Avengers I've read in a while. I love her colors so much.
Yeah, totally. I enjoyed this a lot.
And this was a really silly and fun issue in which Dr. Voodoo accidentally transports Juggernaut into the same vicinity as the Uncanny Avengers, which I thought was really funny.
Yeah, same. And I love the Juggernaut. More Juggernaut.
He is great. It also dealt with, like, Quicksilver, like, kind of growing up and stop being a dick, Quicksilver, you dick. Poor old Synapse gets hurt in the battle as well. This is the kind of Avengers book that I like reading a lot more than, like, your Champions or your regular Avengers book. Like, it's about the drama of, like, the relationships within the team, and they also just face off, like, big threats and... One of them gets injured, but, you know, they save the day.
Super fun.
We've read hundreds of issues just like this, but I really enjoy reading them again and again.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely the best Avengers book on the stands at the moment.
I need to cough my lungs up for a bit so you can choose the next book we're reading.
Excellent. Well, I also read... Did you read Generation X?
Nope.
I did. Written by Christina Strain, with art by Amilcar Pinner, colors by Philippe Sobrero. So this is the kind of, like, useless X-Men team of, like, Nature Girl and Eye Boy and all these characters who aren't really good enough to be main X-Men, but they're still there and they're still going to the school. And this had a whole story about, because do you remember how in was it Thor we saw Quentin Quire just hanging out on Krakoa in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In this issue, Krakoa comes back to the school because he's like, Quentin, you said you were coming straight back. And you just left me there. And so Krakoa tunnels this huge tunnel all the way under New York to go to the school, which is now in the middle of Central Park. And slightly fucks things up. And everyone's like, Quentin! And that's about it. That was a good issue. I liked it. I like this. I like the series. I think that it's like a really good, fun X-Men book. Like, this is my favorite of the X books.
So, yeah, and in a similar reason that Uncanny Avengers is our favorite Avengers book.
Yeah.
It's, like, more about the interplay between the different characters and the drama.
Yeah, it's mostly romance and small-scale things.
Yes.
Small-scale threats. That's what I want.
Let's talk about Runaways, issue 3.
Yay!
by Rainbow Rowell, Chris Anker, and Matthew Wilson. In this issue, we see the Runaways team of Gert and Nico and Chase go to find Carolina, who was... What does she have, like, weird, like, light-based powers?
Yeah, isn't she, like, an alien or something, and she has to put on a bracelet to hide her alien rainbow flying powers?
That's right, yeah. And so Carolina's still on Earth. She is, she's studying.
She's gone to university.
Yeah, and she's, like, seeing a therapist. She's really happy with herself, and she's, like, you know, forgiven herself from her parents and what she did as the Runaways. Oh my god, I said the worst leg cramp.
I don't know what's going on.
My leg is like attacking me. I'm leaving this in, by the way. Runaways number 3 was so good it gave me a leg cramp, and I'm currently writhing on the ground trying to stretch it out. Fuck.
Oh my god.
I'm so glad this isn't a video podcast. Oh my god.
It is that good of an issue though, guys. It will cause you physical pain. Because Chris Anker's art is so beautiful and the colours are so lovely. And that final page where you see Victor's head, which we assume in the last issue we saw, you know, Victor, who's like the half-son of Ultron or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And he died in... When did he die? Oh, he died in...
The Vision.
The Vision, exactly.
Tom King's
The Vision. And so the Runaways are gifted his head in a box, but he's just... He might just be powered down, guys. He might not actually be dead, because can robots actually die?
And you see this excellent panel where, like, his head is like sideways on the dashboard, and then you have to turn the page to so you can see from the angle that he's seeing it at to read the panels, and you see what he sees. I thought that was really well done.
But I like so much what they're kind of addressing in this Runaways book. Like, I like the fact that they're like, Gert's still 16. And everyone else is older. Yes. And so she's like, I can't date you anymore, Chase. You're like way older than me, and it's creepy and weird. And she's still stuck in this like, oh, I don't have anywhere else to go, but the world has moved on.
Yeah. I wonder if they're actually going to be a team again at some point.
I don't know.
I love what they're doing with this.
Yeah, I think it's great.
I hope this is selling okay, so we continue to get like a lengthy run out of this.
I hope really, so. Really if you good. Like YA stuff generally, I think that this would really appeal to you.
Yeah.
If you like teen superheroes, I think this would appeal to you. If you like
it's so good.
Pretty art, I think this would appeal to you.
God, the check art it out, is guys. Wonderful.
Give it a shot.
Especially the redesign of Carolina is awesome. I love her hair. Chris Anker's so good,
and he's so good at like understanding what young people actually wear now, and so it doesn't look like really cringy and weird.
Totally.
Looks great.
And I love that everyone's bodies are shaped so differently too.
Yes.
It's great.
Absolutely.
Runaways, one of my favorites of the week too. I read a bunch of Marvel books that I don't know if you read. Did you read any more?
Yeah, I read 5 more.
Wow. Go through them. Let's start.
Jessica Jones, issue 14. Return of the Purple Man.
Bendis, Gatos, Hollingsworth, together again. This is the Purple Man who has infiltrated Jessica Jones' life again and is talking to her through her daughter.
Creepy.
I thought it was creepy and kind of crass, and I didn't like it.
Yeah, it's a pretty, like... I mean, maybe we're just sensitive because of our... As a mother, which is how I like to start all sentences now, it made me extremely uncomfortable. But maybe that's... It's doing its job? You know, like, I didn't hate this issue, but it is a bit of a kind of cheap, immediate emotional response. Fucking with a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, I didn't like it.
Mm.
Didn't like it one bit, Shimon.
Yeah. He's a really uncomfortable-making villain. Because of his creepy sex pervert status.
Yeah, and especially after the way they portrayed him in the Netflix series as well.
Mm.
Did you watch that?
No. I got through half an episode.
I don't think they've ever explicitly said that he never raped Jessica in the comics, but they said as much in the TV show.
Yeah.
And, you know, even just having him there in this. I don't know. It just feels weird, especially with the daughter involved. I don't know.
Yeah.
I thought it was a bit gross.
It's a little bit. It makes you uncomfortable, for sure.
Yeah. What else did you read from Marvel?
I read Royals, issue 10.
Yep. Well, so you came back on board.
Yeah, because what a great cover. And also,
yep.
What great art from our boy Rodriguez.
Javier Rodriguez.
Incredible colors from Jordi Belair. I think that, like, the first thing that I said, because Nate was looking through it at home, and I was like, ooh, great colors. And he was like, it's your favorite, Jordi Belair. But yeah, this is a great looking book, and I haven't been keeping up with this series, but I understood what was going on in this issue, and I enjoyed it, and it looks great.
Well, it's just a bunch of cosmic bullshit.
Yeah.
And you just, Al Ewing just takes you for a ride with an incredible art team on board, and it's impossible not to be swept away by it.
Yeah, I love Javier Rodriguez. I feel like he goes in a really unexpected direction for drawing, like, big robots. They
yeah,
just have
totally.
Big hands. Big, chunky, yeah. Like, four-fingered hands, and they look great. I love it.
It's so awesome. And always disembodied heads. Mm-hmm. And one guy has a head, like peering out of his head like a chest alien.
Yes, but it also kind of looks like a willy. Because that's kind of what
he's so good. They never keep him on the same book for the entire run, though.
Except for that Doctor Strange Sorcerer's
No, no, he didn't finish that off.
Oh, yeah, true. True.
Yeah.
But he's so good. He's so creative.
Yeah, he's incredible. He's so good.
Great page layouts.
I read Venom 157 this week.
I didn't read that.
Because it... Did you see the cover?
Yeah, I did, Craven, but I still was like, nah.
Craven the Hunter? Yeah, it's, you made the right call.
Yay.
This book is... It's good to see Craven trying to fight Venom, but overall the story is still pretty weird and dull with like his dumb dinosaurs that live in the sewers. I don't know, whatever. I'm going to drop Venom.
That sounds really exciting. I feel like it's a skill if you've managed to make dumb dinosaurs who live in the sewers boring.
Well, he did it. He done did it.
You did it, guys.
The Despicable Deadpool this week was an excellent issue, 289, written by Jerry Duggan, with art by Scott Koblish, with colors by Nick Filardi. This was a brilliant, like, insane time travel where you have Cable and Strife, both of whom are characters that can alter the time stream. So they're all fighting, and every time the other side thinks they're winning the battle, they bring in another thing through a time portal. So at one point, like, Deadpool and Cable are about to win, and then suddenly dinosaurs appear out of nowhere. And then they kill all the dinosaurs, but then vampires come and resurrect all the dinosaurs, so it's vampire dinosaurs.
That's pretty funny.
And then a nuclear bomb goes off, and they are, like, radioactive vampire dinosaurs. It was really, really silly and fun, and very well-drawn action. And just, you know, it's a fun and good Deadpool action book.
Nice. You know what I did read? I read Spider-Man vs. Deadpool.
Oh, wow.
Because our boy Chris Bacciello is on interiors.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I...
Who wrote it?
Really enjoyed this. And it's funny how they've managed to make... So this is written by Robbie Thompson... Pencils by Chris Bacciello, oh, cool. Inks by Tim Townsend, Alve and Richard Friend, colors by Chris Bacciello.
That is a great, great creative team.
Totally. And Robbie Thompson has done a really great job of having this fit in current continuity, but have it still be, like, fun and separated from that. So we've got the Peter Parker who's living on Mockingbird's couch, not having a job, and him trying to track down Deadpool because Deadpool killed Phil Coulson, and so he's a bad guy now, so... Spider-Man's like, I'm going to take you in and redeem myself. But Deadpool is annoying and confusing and just shows him around his house when he's got all these big sharks and new sidekicks and he's selling S.H.I.E.L.D. weapons to the highest bidder. But it's really good fun. Robbie Thompson has a really good voice for Deadpool. Makes him genuinely funny, not just irritating. The page with what do you call it, where it's like where the names of the people who did the comic are, that page,
like the credits,
yeah,
credits?
Like the credits page is like just a panel and Deadpool just says who's involved in it. I thought that was a pretty funny clever little Deadpool-y meta touch that I enjoyed a lot.
Yeah, cool. I'll definitely try and pick that one up.
Yeah, it's a good issue. Solid issue.
What number is it again?
It is the Spider-Man vs. Deadpool issue 23, Arms Race Part 1.
23.
Good fun.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for reading a Deadpool book.
Yeah, I know.
Who saw that coming?
Not me.
So I read the finale, I think it's the finale, of Zombies Assemble.
Oh, yeah.
Number 2, which is the manga that was about, like, kind of like the Marvel Avengers. So, the movie version of the Avengers going up against, like, a bunch of zombies
mm-hmm.
and a weird virus that made them all become zombies. And it was written by Komiyama and drawn by Komiyama with translations by Jim Zub. And we were both enamored with this when it started. We thought it was so cool, but it ends really, really stupidly, and I was just kind of like, why did I read this? But I stuck it out, and I finished something that I started, and that's what's important.
Good job. Hey, I have a Marvel Cinematic Universe question for you, but it might be considered a spoiler.
What is it?
From the post-credit scene in Thor. What was that?
Okay, you know what? Save it.
Okay.
We'll do a post-credit scene of this episode.
Great.
In which we can discuss it without spoiling. Cool. I love it.
Excellent. I'm into it.
Watch us forget. Star Wars issue number 38 saw the creative team of Kieran Gillen take over. Well, the new writer of Kieran Gillen take over with ongoing artists Salvador La Roca and Guru EFX. He's actually continuing immediately after where Jason Aaron's run finishes, pretty much.
Okay.
But references a lot of Rogue One stuff in this issue, and I made my way through the issue. I like, you know, I've said many times I don't like Salvador La Roca's extremely photo referencey kind of art mm-hmm. when he does his renditions of all the different actors from Star Wars, but I also just didn't really gel with the writing on this issue either, so I think I'm going to finally give up the Star Wars comic.
It's a great call.
I'm out.
I support that.
It's been mostly pretty good, but I don't want to complain about Star Wars every week, especially in the lead up to the new movie coming out.
Mm.
So yeah, I'm gonna drop this one.
Good call.
Did you read any more Marvel books?
I did. I read two more. I read Spirits of Vengeance issue 2.
Oh yeah, which, I didn't like the first issue of this.
Nah, look, you can't have Blade on the cover of 2 issues and then give me like 1 panel of Blade per issue and have me still be on board. Not sold, Jesus. Guys. Give me more Blade. Or go home. That doesn't make sense. But, yeah, I won't be reading any more of this, I don't think. I also read issue 2 of Falcon. Did you read this?
No, because I didn't like the first issue of this very much either.
Yeah.
How was the second?
I'm so torn. I feel like... So this is written by Rodney Barnes with art by Joshua Cassara and colours by Rochelle Rosenberg. And this is a sort of... I feel like in 10 issues... Rodney Barnes is going to be a really great comic book writer.
Yeah.
But at this point...
This is his first comic after writing a lot of movie scripts and stuff like that.
Right, okay, yeah. It reads like that. And there's a sort of sameness to a lot of these characters, which is sort of frustrating, like a kind of snappy, bantery element. And it's kind of funny because, like, panel to panel, I would find it charming and then irritating. And, like, sometimes it really nailed it and really hit and it really suited the character. And then sometimes it was like, why is Dr. Voodoo talking about Beyonce? This doesn't make any sense. I think I have a problem. Like, is this now a thing? Like, is Beyonce just canon in the Marvel universe? Like, why not come up with your own? I think
references to pop music always are.
Come up with your own.
What is Rihanna?
Come up with your
Rihanna.
Own.
Dazzler.
Yeah, like, you have your own pop stars. Use Dazzler for crying out loud.
Yeah, sure. And there was a Dazzler poster on Carolina's wall in Runaways.
Oh yeah,
this week.
See that I enjoy. Reference your own pop culture, not ours. It's the 616.
Or reference Rihanna.
If you're gonna reference anyone, make it Rihanna or don't.
So Rodney Barnes was a writer on Chris Rock's show Everybody Hates Chris. He was a writer on The Boondocks, which is He wrote the Birth of a Patriot short story in the Secret Empire Brave New World spin-off that we read earlier in the year.
Okay.
And he has a new Image book coming out called Killadelphia.
Okay.
Maybe him doing his own thing will be him growing into himself as a comic book writer.
That would be cool. But there's some bits where it's really funny where, like, he's kind of got Falcon as a slightly upright, slightly boring dude, and he's got this really, like, fast-talking young sidekick. And there's a bit where Falcon goes, he can kiss my ass. And Patriot says, oh, snap. Ass is like the first cuss word I've heard you say. Crap and Mickey Ficky don't count. And the Falcon says, ass isn't a cuss word. It's a part of the body. I thought that was funny. That's I good. Thought that really, like, it was a cute little interaction. And it really, really nailed that bit. But there's other bits where I'm not into it. Anyway.
I don't remember Sam Wilson being, like, a super uptight dude, though. Is that a thing?
I don't think it is. I think it's, like, he's not had a really consistent sort of character. And so you kind of can change him around. But I think that it's a little... It's not quite perfect in this book. But I like Rodney Barnes. And I'll check back in maybe a couple of issues and see how it's coming along.
Cool. So those are all our Marvel books reviewed for the week. We move on to Image. And we're going to start with a review of... Oh, boy. What's a pick from?
I only had three. What have you got?
Slots, Royal City, and Redlands?
Sure thing. Yes.
Let's talk about Slots first. This is written and drawn by Dan Panosian. And we really enjoyed the first issue of this. It was about like a... An ex-con kind of figure coming back to Las Vegas and reuniting with a bunch of old people from his past that he may have left on a bad note with.
Including his son and various ex-wives.
And so he wants to start boxing again to pay off some debts. And this issue kind of introduced us to more people in the town, and we kind of learnt more about them. And I just, all the magic that was in the first issue, I feel like wasn't in this issue for me at all.
Yeah, there was a lot more like kind of exposition in this issue. There was a lot of like telling us about what had happened in the past, while also stuff is going on now, and it didn't quite flow as like beautifully as that first issue. I still think that there's a lot to enjoy, but there were a lot of new characters in this issue that made it hard to kind of keep track of and see what was going on. But I really do love the world that he's created, and I'm invested in some of these characters already, so you know, I'm on board.
A big fan of his art too. Yeah. So yeah, I'll stick around, but yeah, I do want to say that this was disappointing after how much I loved the first issue.
Yeah, it's not as good as the first issue, but it's still pretty good.
Redlands this week, issue number 4, written by Jordi Belair with art by Vanessa Del Rey and Clayton Cowles.
I love this book. Letters.
This was such a good issue too.
Yeah,
Colin Ollie. This is the horror book about a bunch of witches
who are also cops, but they are not. Yep. They are sort of corrupt cops, and they pretty much just use the law to cover up their witchiness. Cool.
And this did some massive amount of world building, like kind of finding out more about each of the different witches, the sisters. Mm-hmm. They were sisters? No, they're just witches. They're witch sisters.
Yeah, sisters in witchiness.
Sisters through witchery. Yep. We learned that one of them has like a daughter who used to be a spider.
Cool.
Which I thought was really cool.
Yep.
Something really, really strange happens to one of them after being attacked in the last issue. And I wasn't quite sure what to make of that. Like, has she been bonked on the head and doesn't remember her witch side of her life? She remembers her past life or something?
I think she's probably been possessed by an evil ghostie.
Yeah.
Or not even an evil ghostie, just a ghostie.
Someone that the witch killed.
Yeah. And man, the back matter of this book is so funny.
Totally.
It's just like so many ads for various like strippers or sex workers, but like 4 pages. I really thought it was funny. I really enjoyed it. And they have such funny names, like the Dick Destroyer.
Tina the Titty Thrasher.
Natasha, pretty, prompt, and professional, and she loves cock.
Get ready for your main course, Tasty Tiffany.
DJ Sexy Lexi. Sexy Lexi loves to get the party started.
Crystal, 19 years old, 122 pounds. Hobbies, long walks on the beach, reading, and anal.
Like, I want to have a drink with Jordi Belair. She seems like an absolute delight. Sunshine. She wants you to stick it where the sun don't shine. I could just read these all out. They make me laugh a lot.
Yeah, we should. Much better than the rest of the episodes.
Yeah.
So far. And then the final one is like DJ Sexy Lexi, yep. who's a DJ and a stripper.
Great. Perfect. Look, that's the final string to your bow, right? DJ, yeah. chef. So
my final form.
Podcaster, stripper.
Dad, stripper. yeah, this is an awesome series. Like, and it's good to have that really lighthearted back matter after such a heavy main issue.
Mm. According to a mutual friend of ours, DJ Leon Smith, there is a stripper at a strip club in Sydney who looks exactly like me.
Really?
Yeah. Cool, huh? I'm trying to convince everyone that it is me, and that after everyone goes to sleep, I just like run into the city.
Get her to record an episode of Serious Issues with me.
Get and her see if and I notice. Leon to do one.
Oh, that's amazing. That's a great idea.
Let's do it.
Royal City, issue number 7 this week, with a fantastic Weezer variant.
Mm-hmm.
This is all set in the 90s, so Jeff Lemire has commissioned all these different tributes to his favourite albums from the 90s for each of the variants for the issues. This issue was really depressing. A nice change of pace from all the other issues of Royal City so far.
Which have been just sunshine and lollipops. So this arc is showing us the last week of Tommy's life. And it's so sad. Just all the way through, it's just sad stuff happening to people that you like. Like his dad. I love his dad. And his dad seems so sad.
Yeah, what I love is like there is this like strange kind of sci-fi element where Tommy is able to communicate via the radio waves,
mm-hmm.
and we kind of see a small explanation of that it happens while he's getting a QT scan, like a
MRI.
What is it, a radio MRI? Yeah, well, is QT different? That's a different kind of scan.
I don't know what that is.
A lot of scans this year, everybody. They're all mixed up, but I'm fine, and that's the main thing. And I love that this is like where we see that where the father's obsession with buying old radios comes mm-hmm. from as well.
This series continues to be excellent.
But it was nice seeing an issue that only featured the two parents and Tommy mm-hmm. instead of all of the family. It felt like a much kind of, like, you know, it was good having a smaller kind of scale focus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a brilliant, sad series featuring Jeff Lemire doing some of the best art I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
From him.
Beautiful colours.
Yeah. Just so good.
Just so lovely. Lovely series.
What cover did you get?
I got the Weezer
cover. Up to the
Yay!
You got the Weezer cover? Cool. All right, cool. Weezer. What's your favourite Weezer song?
I can only think of In the Garage right now, which is definitely not my favourite Weezer song. But it is like a nerd
it's
anthem,
one of them.
Surely.
Everything off the Blue album is like is one that could potentially be number one for me.
Like, yeah.
It just depends what mood I'm in. I think that's the only album that I know every word to back to front.
Did you go to the Blue album tour that they did?
No, I can't, I have a problem with, I can't watch bands anymore.
Oh, really? the King's staff all went together. It was pretty cute.
That's so brilliant. I always get really, really excited about doing something nostalgic and I drink too much and then I don't remember.
Nice.
The things I saw Jebediah do, like they did their first album. That's like an Australian kind of indie band that I was obsessed with in the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And they performed their album from start, their first album from start to finish. And I only remember the last song.
No good.
Yeah, so it's on me. It's not Weezer's fault that I didn't see him. It's all my fault. Royal City's great though.
It is so good.
And Blue Album's yes. Blue Album's the best. Pinkerton is a close second.
Absolutely. Everything else I wouldn't bother with.
I like Hash Pipe on the Green Album. That's a good single.
Oh yeah.
And the sumo wrestlers in the film clip.
Yeah, cool. I love sumo wrestlers.
I got two more Image books that Siobhan didn't read this week. And they are Injection and Rock Candy Mountain. Rock Candy Mountain is a book written and drawn by Kyle Starks with colours by Chris Schweizer. And it's a book that I almost dropped last issue. It's about hobos
mm-hmm.
and the devil. And it's like, it's mostly comedic, but sometimes the jokes don't entirely land and it's very wordy at times. So I was like, always kind of leaving it to the last of the pile. And I did that this week. I was like, one more chance. Fuck, this is a brilliant issue.
Oh, really?
Like one of my favorite issues of the week. Basically, it tells the story of why the main character, the main hobo, his superpower is that he can beat anybody in a fight. He makes a deal with the devil so he can never lose a fight. And we see the scenario that allows that to come about. He basically gets drafted in 1945 to go join the troops in Germany and makes a deal with the devil that he won't die. But basically, he makes a deal with the devil so that he'll never lose a fight. And basically, he's responsible for the death of Hitler.
Oh, great. Excellent.
But it was a really, really good issue that it kind of explained his whole backstory. And I'm so glad I didn't drop this book. It's really, really great. And I imagine this will be like the last issue of the first trade.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely check out Rock Candy Mountain by Kyle Starks. Finally, I read Injection, written by Warren Ellis with art by Declan Shalvey and Jordi Belair. This is the end of this current arc, and we get the message that Injection will return in 2018. But this is like a amazing kind of like supernatural investigations group,
mm-hmm.
Kind of story, and this one turns into a full horror comic with this issue. Like a truly horrifying thing is released from the ground that just completely destroys so many people, and we see our kind of like our two main characters from this arc narrowly escape with their lives and then just move immediately onto another new threat. This is officially reached the point where it's impossible to kind of describe what's happening in this issue without giving too much away. But now is the perfect time for you to catch up, Siobhan.
Oh, yeah?
Read one of the best-looking books on the stand.
It does
Injection.
Look great.
It's very good. Okay, so those are all the image reviews.
Nice.
Meaning we've only got one thing left to do before I can collapse in a pile and die. and that is review all of the other publishers and the books that they released this week. How many have you got in front of you, Siobhan?
One, two, I got four. Three, four, five, six. Six.
Oh, my God. All right, pick a book. Pick any book, Siobhan.
Sherlock, The Great Game. Still just a Sherlock mango. 5 out of 5.
Okay, good review.
Thanks. What about Grass Kings? Did you pick up Grass Kings as well?
Grass Kings, written by Matt Kent with Tyler Jenkins and Hillary Jenkins on art. Yep. What did you think?
I want to hear what you think. I'm joking. I really like this. I like this has become a kind of cool murder mystery book almost, set in this weird secessionist society. So interesting that they kind of have these twin sisters, one of whom has an eye patch, who record everything around the town, like record all these conversations. So there's like a log of all these conversations that people have had. That's pretty cool and interesting. Someone's dad might be implicated in the murder. Someone's dad.
Yeah. I enjoy meeting all the new characters in this town.
Me too.
I've got to say that the back page, the back cover features a Rolf Harris quote.
Yeah, I know. Makes me.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it makes you feel very like conflicted.
I don't know. Maybe Matt Kent doesn't really know who Rolf Harris is. He actually didn't even write that song.
Oh, really?
This is a song that he used to perform.
Yeah.
So he quotes a song from a song called Two Little Boys on the back cover and credits it to Rolf Harris, who is a known pedophile.
Yeah.
A weird decision to do that.
It is a weird. It's an odd call.
To say the least.
Also, was Rolf Harris, like, is it... I mean, I know... Was he charged with being a creepy pedo? Or is he...
I think so.
I know he definitely went to court about it, but I wasn't sure whether he was cleared. Either way, we can all agree he's a creepy weirdo.
Yeah, and maybe don't put him on the back cover of your comic book, which is otherwise fantastic.
Which is otherwise incredible.
Yeah, Rolf Harris was found guilty of 12 counts of indecent assault.
Oh, Jesus Christ. What a world we live in.
And we're talking about like assaults that happened in like between the 60s and the 80s. So many more have come out in just the last week alone.
Yeah, gee whiz.
Good. Let's talk about Centipede number 4, which is a book that you didn't read.
But I did
about
not.
Before I start coughing and spluttering again. Written by Max Bemis, who we mentioned earlier on Moon Knight, with art by Aoin Marin. This is the penultimate issue of this pretty good series about the last man on Earth against the big centipede from the Centipede arcade game. In this one, half the issue is just him tripping balls and imagining himself reborn as like a centipede himself. And being forced into battle.
Spooky.
And it was so good, it makes me cough.
Nice.
But it doesn't give me a leg cramp. which is the new the new scale of greatness that we'll use in this podcast.
Siobhan,
go and tell me, can you talk about the one comic that I didn't read that you've got left while I run and refill my water bottle?
Fighting American? I'm assuming
Fighting American. Fighting American. Go for it. Do it.
So this is written by Gordon Rennie with art by Duke Mighton, colors by Tracy Bailey, letters by Simon Boland. So this is like an old Joe Simon and Jack Kirby property to kind of trade in on the success of Captain America. It's basically like a Captain America, but he's called the Fighting American. And I quite like the take that Shatterstar agrees that they've taken on this comic, where much like Captain America, Johnny Nelson Flagg has been transported to current day America when he was trying to fight some communists, and he still thinks that the communists are the worst threat, and it's just kind of him dealing with the world now. So he gets paired up with a female FBI agent, and he's like, well, I guess she'll do until a real agent has the time to come and come and help us out. And that's pretty, like, entertaining in a, like, aren't old people sexist sort of way. I actually really enjoy this. The art's really, like, kind of weird. There's really cool, interesting faces. Duke Mighton is, like, a really interesting cartoonist, I think. The colours are, like, really kind of bright, poppy flats. That I really enjoy. I think this is like a fun take on a classic property. Shatterstar does not like it though. He doesn't enjoy all the jokes about communism.
At least we timed that with, like, it would have been so bad if he started crying while I was away from the microphone. And both of us were like reaching for the other person, like, help, you help. No, you help. No, you review. What else have we got? Eugenic.
Yes.
Issue number two for of Eugenic, written by James T. in the fourth with Eric Donovan.
I like that you pronounce it like Eugene.
Through Boom Studios. Yeah, oh, Eugenic, sorry. Wait, Eugenic? Eugenic.
I would say Eugenic, but...
Yeah, it's definitely Eugenic. You're definitely right. Oops. People have started, like, mentioning all the things I mispronounce all the time, which is always fun. There are just words that you read without ever hearing.
Totally. We all have them.
Give me a break, everybody. So the first issue of this was insane. Basically, like, in order to save the Earth's population, a scientist does something, creates a drug that allows women to become fertile again and give birth. But when they do give birth, all their babies are hideous.
Scary, scary, purple babies.
And he does this to basically make everyone... If everyone looks gross, then the world will be a better place because people won't judge people based on image. Mm-hmm. Which is noble, but...
Misguided.
Maybe flawed. And then we've jumped many years into the future now.
200 years.
And there's like 15% of the population is still regular looking humans. And they are being like forced to live in like camps and stuff like that. So maybe his incredible vision of the future wasn't a very smart one.
I really enjoy this series. I like the way that they're doing each issue as a kind of standalone thing, and each issue jumps 200 years in the future. I think that's really clever. I think they've done a really great job of, like, really solid, interesting world building of a really strange concept. I love this. I love everything about this book. I think it's really, what's the word? Like, they're aiming really high, and they've achieved that.
Yeah, it's a very high concept book done very well that doesn't feel exhausting to read.
Yeah, absolutely. And so much like subtle world building of just the way it looks and the surrounding things, and the fact that so many people seem to use makeup to try and look like the purple people, the Newmans as they're called.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which is great.
I think that's a lot to really enjoy about this book.
Although I kept it, whenever they said Newmans, I kept imagining it in Jerry Seinfeld's voice.
Exactly. That's the only issue with this book.
So I'm going to guess that the issue that you didn't read, that I didn't read, that you did read, is Judge Dredd, Blessed Earth.
Oh, no, I didn't read that.
Oh, whoops. We both skipped it this week. Oh, let's just assume it was great, like all the issues before it, and make sure we both pick it up this week.
Agreed.
Then you would have read the Dan Dare book.
I did read Dan Dare. Did you read Dan Dare?
No, I did not.
Ah.
No.
Written
by Peter Milligan.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I still like it. So, bad aliens are attacking Dan Dare. Now there's a cool, sexy alien lady who's come to help them out. But she does not have time for his nonsense. Anyway, it's pretty good.
Who dares attack Dan Dare? We're going to finish this episode with a review of Ghost Money, issue number 4, written by Terry Smolderin with art by Dominique Bertale. This is a story published by Lion Forge. They've translated it for English for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible story about about so many things. It's engrossing. Like, you know, I in the same way that you failed to kind of find the right words to describe eugenic, this is like that tenfold for me. It's so high concept, and it's about like central intelligence and the Middle East
and money,
technology,
the economy,
and money, and yeah,
and then also just relationships.
Yeah, and the secret language between lovers.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking love this book.
It's so gorgeous to look at. Like, this is such a beautiful, interesting, intelligent comic book, and I love it. You get so much from it.
Yeah, this is the book on the stands that I'm most excited about month to month now. And hilariously, again, it's Lion Forge doing the best stuff ever.
Lion Forge have just, created such a great niche for what they're doing, and I'm so excited by it.
And they've really, made me realize that I need to read more European comic books, which I think everyone can agree is only a good thing.
I agree. And they really reward you for buying in single issue. You know, I feel like they're single-handedly trying to bring the single issue back by just printing things beautifully.
Yeah, such high-quality books. And it's an extra long comic. This issue took me 20 minutes at least to read, and it's only $3.99. on the stands. It's absolutely worth your money, worth your time. Please try and pick up Ghost Money.
Agreed.
Or wait another year for it to come out and trade. But I think check down the singles is definitely what you should be doing.
And just check out everything that Lion Forge puts out. I'm yet to be steered wrong by them.
Well, especially with their translated stuff, definitely.
Absolutely.
I mean, you weren't the biggest fan of the Voltron book, were you?
Ah, that's true.
Well, those are our only... those are all of our reviews. Our only Jesus. I need to get back into bed. But I have to edit this episode.
No, you can do that from bed.
Yeah, that's very true. Hopefully Siri can do it for me. Siri, cut out Siobhan. normally I would have had the foresight to let you know all of the great books that are coming out this week. Instead, I've just gotten to A and seen a book that you should definitely get, and it ties into Lion Forge, the first trade of Aberrato.
Pick it up.
Which just wrapped up a couple of weeks ago. We really, really loved. It's a bit set in Montreal. It's about rebels against the government.
Mm-hmm.
It's brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
It looks fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
The first trade of that comes out, so please pick that one up. That's a highest recommendation for both of us.
Absolutely.
If you would like to find us online, we can find us facebook.com/seriousissuespodcast or join our group at facebook.com/group/seriousissuespodcast. We are also on Twitter at @serious_issues or individually at @SiobhanCBG and at @levdog, LEVDAWG. We're on Instagram as well under those same nicknames. And you can send us an email, seriousissues@kingscomics.com, or support the show, just like Denim Harry did at the beginning of the episode, by finding us at patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Thanks,
and
guys.
Make sure you keep listening for our very, very special Thor Ragnarok Easter egg post-credit scene.
Where Levins explains to me what happened in it. Okay, now.
And goodbye. Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and is about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
So, explain to me what you need to explain.
Okay, so the post-credit scene of Thor is just like a big spaceship, right? Was I supposed to recognize whose spaceship that was?
I think it's meant to be Thanos' ship.
Okay. Well, that's kind of what I assumed also, but I was like, is there something more to it? But no, just a big scary spaceship, probably Thanos.
Yeah, I mean, like, unfortunately, not all superheroes and villains have the foresight to put, like, their bat, like, you know how Batman puts his head on his car?
Exactly, yeah.
Everyone should just put their head on their car.
I agree.
Or maybe he had, like, personalized number plates.
So it's like, I
love death.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, there, yeah, good. Anything else you need explained?
No, that's it, I think.
Did you like the movie?
Yeah, I did. I really enjoyed it. I liked Tiger.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Good fun.
How good was Korg?
Korg was excellent. Korg was really good fun. I like it.
I want a Korg solo movie.
Yep, same.
Excellent.
Excellent. All right, well, also, Jeff Goldblum. I want a Jeff Goldblum solo movie in that character.
Just as that character, or just as Jeff Goldblum?
I mean, what's Jeff Goldblum the
beats up the Marvel Universe.
I'm into it. Yes, please.
See you guys.
Bye. Nice. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.